I'm Tommy Gimler. Week 1 of the 2015 NFL season featured more fuck-ups and colossal brain farts than an average day in the life of Lindsay Lohan. I'll talk about that and more as I'm riding solo behind a locked hotel room door because I'm in Houston. It's the Daily Upper Decker Podcast, and it's in your face.
In the face! In the face!
The Daily Upper Decker. Nothing but sports and crap.
The NFL's Week 1 was both entertaining and dumbfounding, as guys like Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady proved they were worth every penny, while guys like Eli Manning showed the nation he was exactly what they thought he was, an overpaid sack of fuck. And that's where we'll start this week's Hot Mess.
The Hot Mess.
Well, it looks as though the Giants just forked over $84 million for a quarterback who manages a game like an absolute fucktard. The Dallas Cowboys beat the New York Giants Sunday night, and there are only two ways to describe how that happened. Now, either the Giants-Cowboys game was fixed, or Eli Manning and Tom Coughlin are the dumbest motherfuckers in the game.
Fuck!
And there's no middle ground on this, kids. Look, just when you thought it couldn't get any worse than the dick sandwich the Green Bay Packers delivered to their fans in the NFC Championship game, Manning and Coughlin, they didn't wait long to show the sports world that indeed there can be a bigger display of buffoonery and ineptitude. Let's start with that that shit dick Coughlin. Running back Rashad Jennings told reporters after the game that he was told not to score.
Fuck!
Why? You'd go up two scores with less than 2 minutes to play, and the Dallas offense had moved down the field about as well as like a midget trying to climb stairs. So why wouldn't you want to score? You score and the game is yours. There's no way they're coming back from that. At the 420 mark, and with the game seemingly in hand, Manning only let 20 seconds tick off the play clock instead of 39. And those 19 seconds were kind of important to Dallas on their game-winning touchdown drive. And of course, even my grandma heard about Manning's asshat decision to throw the ball out of the back of the end zone on third down instead of taking a sack. And that stopped the clock for a Dallas team that didn't have any timeouts left. Even my grandma's heard about it, and she's been dead for 10 years. So there's a great article on Deadspin. They did a great breakdown of the shit show that the New York Giants were in the second half of Sunday night's game. And unless you went to school in Mississippi, you can head on over there and give it a good read. What it does is it basically, the Deadspin article basically outlines how the Giants just forked over $84 million for a quarterback who's a goddamn idiot.
He's an idiot. Comes from upbringing. Parents are probably idiots too.
I mean, this is little league shit here. Manning's lack of clock management skills Sunday night was the baseball equivalent to not knowing how many outs there are. So you run around the bases on a pop fly to left because you think there's only two outs when in fact there's only one. His clock management was so pig shit awful that even the cooks at Champs Americana in Houston, which is where I went to watch the game on Sunday night, even the cooks at Champs Americana in Houston were questioning his ability to manage the clock. And I don't know what it takes to be a cook there, but I'm pretty sure all you need is the ability to not burn the chicken. Not a degree in school, not years of experience, just the ability to take the broccoli out of the microwave when the microwave dings. And these guys are calling Eli Manning a fucking moron.
A fucking moron! A fucking moron!
And speaking of fucking morons, how about Jason Pierre-Paul's blown the shit right hand? You all remember JPP. He's the Giants defensive end who turned down a $60 million contract offer from the Giants. And then decided to play with a van full of fireworks over the July 4th weekend.
Oh, shit. Whoa, whoa. That was awesome.
And now he has no index finger. And actually, based on what we've seen on the video of JPP pulling weights behind him during a workout, it turns out he's missing a hell of a lot more than that. Like, part of his thumb, for instance. So yeah, he's dicked. And maybe it's just us, but who gives a shit about a pulling weights workout in a video? Who gives a shit about that? What does that prove? Is he going to be rushing the quarterback with a sled of weights attached to him? No, sir. If I'm the Giants, I want to see him put his nubs on the ground and explode toward a quarterback off that mangled thing. Could be a real quarterback or a dummy. I don't give a shit. I just want to see that he can get some kind of push using those nubs and then wrap and tackle with it. But a sled of weights? Shit, I can do that. Who gives a shit about the weights? I want to see him put those nubs on the ground, push off of it, explode, and then tackle a real quarterback or a dummy. Just show me that you can wrap and show me that you can tackle. Hell, go get RG3 to do it. It's not like he's got anything to do.
The Hot Mess.
Speaking of fixed games, what the shit was that that went down in St. Louis Sunday afternoon? In case you missed it, the Seahawks were leading by a touchdown with less than a minute to play. And then they surrendered a 37-yard touchdown pass from Nick Foles to Lance Kendricks. With less than a minute to play, Nick Foles to Lance Kendricks for 37 yards and a touchdown. Of course, Lance Kendricks, you might recognize him from the phrase, "Who the fuck is Lance Kendricks?" Still, even at that point, if you're a Seahawks fan, it's like no big worries. The Seahawks have been pretty money in overtime games lately. They're kicking off, but with that defense, despite the fact, and the cornerback slipped down. Cornerback, linebacker, whoever was covering Kendricks at the time, slipped, fell down, and the safety was late in getting over there to help out. So that's why the touchdown happened. So fine, he slipped. No big deal. No worries. It's overtime. The Seahawks have been good in overtime. They're kicking off, but with that defense, they should be fine. Well, unless, of course, you try an onside fucking kick in overtime and give your opponent the football at midfield. Who does that? An onside kick to begin overtime. Honestly, I don't care about the fact that Marshawn Lynch got stuffed on 4th-and-1 to bring the game to an end. That shit happens. That's part of the game. But an onside kick to begin overtime? Who does that shit? Well, I guess the answer is Steven Hauschka, the Seahawks kicker, who took responsibility for it immediately after the game. Steven Hauschka taking responsibility for it immediately after the game, which he should. So I don't know why the media is giving him so much credit. Everyone's saying, well, he owned up to it right away. And then they walk away from him. They don't ask him any more questions. So why is it okay to be an absolute fucking idiot on the playing field if you apologize and own up to it after the game? Anywhere else in life, it doesn't work that way. Like, let's say Steve Buscemi fucks a goat. Or don't. You'll probably be a better person for it. But let's say Nucky Thompson gets busted fucking a goat, and he holds a press conference at the cop shop afterward, in which he says, guys, my bad. I was trying to do something different, and it just didn't work out. That's on me. At that point, you wouldn't just say, well, you know, Buscemi's owned up to it. I guess we can move on. I feel bad for him. His teeth are all fucked up anyway. Let's give him a pass on this one. You wouldn't just say that. You wouldn't just say, oh, well, he owned up to fucking the goat. We can all move on. So why do we stop grilling Hauschka for being a total shit dick on the playing field just for saying what we already know? He fucked up. And then on top of that, he lies about it, saying he was trying to do a pooch kick. Bullshit. I've watched the replay of that kick at least a dozen times. And he's going full onside in that one. There's no effort to get underneath that ball and push it up into the air. He's kicking the top of that ball. And even if he was telling the truth, why would you pooch kick it anyway? It's not like that excuse makes it any better. Why not just drill it out the back of the end zone like you do on every other kick and make the Rams start on their own 20? Bring the heat on Nick Foles. Force a three and out. Get the ball. Drive down the field. Kick a field goal. Win the game. So again, either these guys in the Giants and the Seahawks, either these guys are overthinking a simple situation so bad that they come off looking like absolute retards, or they are simply just retards. Or these games are fixed, just like my wife's purse dog.
The hot mess.
It looks like we are going to stick with animals as a theme here in the hot mess. As at one point during the Eagles game, and that's not what relates this to the animals at all, but at one point during the Eagles embarrassment in Atlanta Monday night, not sure if you saw this. If not, you have to go to YouTube and type in ball gagging Eagles coach. And it is pretty much exactly what the title implies. As at one point during the game, one of the Eagles coaches, or whichever one of Chip Kelly's cousins is in charge of signaling in the next play, basically just pantomimed with one arm, like that of like a gorilla action, you know, up into your armpit, and he's pretending that he's a monkey or an ape. And then with the other hand, he's pretending that either he's like, you know, sucking off a dude in his mouth, or just like, you know, maybe just the balls are in his mouth. Maybe he's just gagging on the balls like this. It's really something you gotta see. And in today's day and age, with all of the television cameras and then the ability of people just at home to quick hit pause, rewind it a little bit, use your smartphone to take a video of it and post it to YouTube, it amazes me that an NFL coach would just say, yeah, that's what we're going to use to put a play in. And maybe Chip Kelly just is that fucking arrogant to where he's like, he doesn't care. You know what? He doesn't care if the cameras catch this. Personally, I think it's hysterical. And I don't know why they're stopping there. I mean, hopefully someone pays more attention to this coach now. And like, hopefully next week we see something like someone holding up like a sign of Khloe Kardashian, and then this guy pretends that he's fisting her or something. No reason to stop there. I like the play call. I just think that it's pretty arrogant on the part of head coach Chip Kelly and this coach right here, or whichever one of his cousins this guy is. It just screams some kind of arrogance that you think you can pretend to be an ape or a monkey or a baboon on one side of your body and then pretend that you're taking a big black dick in your mouth or maybe just sucking on the balls for a little bit, and no television cameras are going to pick it up, and then nobody at home is going to take a video of it and then put it up online.
The hot mess.
We're going to stick with the Monday night action in the curb stomping that was provided by the San Francisco 49ers on the Minnesota Vikings. I don't know if you guys watched that game, but that was probably one of the worst fucking football games I have ever seen in my life. Between the penalties and the missed field goals, it was just atrocious. And at least the 49ers figured it out somewhat and put some points on the board in the second half. If you're a Vikings fan, I mean, if you're still alive after watching that, if you didn't fucking just go suck on a pistol and pull the trigger after watching your team go through that, I mean, your expectations were through the roof. And then Adrian Peterson carries the ball 10 times for 31 yards. Put in Matt Asiata. Put in Matty. Ugh. But perhaps the funniest thing that took place on Monday night in San Francisco was new 49ers head coach Jim Tomasula. Now, ESPN cut to this fat fuck like 40 times that night. And I'm not talking about the way he looked when they cut to him in the fourth quarter, like right before he was about to, you know, win the game. I mean, it was in hand for pretty much the entire second half. But when they cut to this guy right away, and Jim Tomasula is a big boy, but they cut to Jim Tomasula right away, and like the second or third time they showed him, it was like, holy shit. Did they already give him a Gatorade shower? It was less than 70 degrees when the 49ers and Vikings kicked off at Levi's Stadium Monday night. But by looking at Jim Tomasula, you would have thought it was like 112 and humid. I mean, he was sweaty. He looked like my buddy Luke when he goes in the Old Country Buffet and they run out of cream corn and he has to sit there. He loves cream corn. And if they're out, holy shit, he just starts sweating. I mean, the tension and everything that's building up inside if Luke doesn't get him some cream corn. So I'm telling you, I mean, he looked drenched by the time. He probably actually looked better. He probably lost weight during the game. I mean, it was almost like he was sitting under like the only rain cloud at the stadium. Seriously, it looked as though his team had already given him a Gatorade shower in the first quarter. So we're going to go ahead and we're going to say that we think that Jim Tomasula is going to suffer some kind of heart attack or some kind of cardiac episode on the sidelines this year. And unless he hires a personal trainer or unless he decides to coach his next game in a tank top or anything less than six layers of clothing above the waist, really. I mean, the dude's wearing long sleeves. It's just under 70 degrees. Long sleeves, and you know he's got some shit on under that. Look like Martin Lawrence trying to jog in Los Angeles in July with fucking eight layers on. Well, if he doesn't change up what he's doing, we're going to go ahead and set the odds of some kind of cardiac episode for this guy happening before week 10 at minus 120. You lay 120 down, you're going to win 100 if he has it. That's not good for Jim Tomasula. Sweet fucking mustache, though.
The hot mess.
Staying at Levi's Stadium on Monday night. It's not like you needed another reason to just sit in the comfort of your own house and watch an NFL game or get like the package from DirecTV and watch any NFL game you want in the privacy of your own home on your own couch, drinking beers that don't cost like $9 a pop and are flat by the time you get it. It's not like you needed another reason to do that. That's why attendance is down at NFL stadiums. So it's not like you needed another reason to like sit home, but what happened at Levi's Stadium on Monday night could be like one of the clinchers. I remember last year there was a gang fight at Levi's Stadium. Those dudes ended up like getting prosecuted. I know one of the guys, he's going to be in jail for a long time. They fucked that guy up something fierce. And why this dude decided to wear the opponent's jersey. This dude is wearing a Vikings jersey. And it's not like he's probably just walking around minding his own business. He probably said something he shouldn't have. And it was probably not, if he's a Vikings fan, it probably wasn't anything intelligent. It was probably just something like 49ers suck. If it was a Vikings fan, there was nothing intelligent coming out of the mouth of that guy. But the beating they put on this poor fucker when it was over was unreal. I'm going to go ahead and just play the audio of the fight. And the audio alone is pretty brutal, yet hysterical at the same time. One of the things that you couldn't hear in there, and this is how stupid Vikings fans are. You know, say what you want about Raiders fans or Cowboys fans or Jaguars fans. Jaguars, to be a fan of the Jacksonville Jaguars, you got to be a fucking moron. That's for sure. But say what you want about all those fans, but I don't think it gets any dumber than a Vikings fan. There was some ass clown who rolled through that crowd toward the end. He's wearing a Tony Romo jersey that is Viking. It's like a Vikings jersey with Tony Romo on the back of it. 00. Tony Romo. Are you fucking kidding me? That's the intelligence of a Viking fan. But just a couple of takeaways from that fight. a couple of old white dudes rolled in there, and you could probably hear them yelling, "You stupid asses, you stupid asses, we won. What the hell is the matter with you?" It was almost like he was like criticizing them, yet like telling them, you know, this would be okay if we would have lost. If we would have lost, I would have just kept on going. Yeah, beat the fucking piss out of them. But you stupid asses, it's like, yeah, they're stupid. They're fighting over an NFL game. None of the guys or girls in the fight were on the field. You're fighting over something else somebody did. All probably because a Vikings fan said, "You Niners suck." Or something to that equivalent, if he could even speak English. So it's crazy that if you would have just said, "You stupid asses, what are you doing?" and then end, you're done right there. That's it. Yeah, you're stupid. You're fighting. But then he throws in, "We won." So he's almost, again, he's almost just saying that it would have been okay. Yes, go ahead. Kick him in the fucking face two more times while he's down on the ground, knocked out. Give him three more kicks. It's okay. We lost. Let's fucking take it out on this fat fuck. And then you also might have heard how it was calming down a little bit, but then all of a sudden everybody started getting riled up and hollering, hooting and hollering at these fucking kids. They started going nuts again, and it was because the old 49ers, the old white dude, the 49ers fan who was in there like trying to keep everyone off the Vikings fan, put his hand on a young Latino lady who was trying to get her kicks in. Of course, every fight in San Francisco or every fight in California has one of those fucking broads, right? All of a sudden, she's got to get her fucking... Just stay out of it. Stay out of it. So he puts his hand on her. And all of a sudden, all the 49ers fans who wanted to beat the shit out of that Vikings fan start going after that guy. Like, you know, they're getting riled up for him. And I'll tell you what, that old man really did that Vikings fan a favor, because you can see that provided the out for the fat fuck Vikings fan that was getting the shit kicked out of him on the ground. He somehow woke up, stood up on his feet, and walked off. So, I don't know if they exchanged information or anything like that, but that Vikings fan owes that old white dude, that 49ers fan, some kind of Christmas card or maybe like a $15 gift card to Subway or something.
The hot mess.
And speaking of sending Christmas cards, I think every Green Bay Packers fan needs to send a Christmas card to the Chicago Bears front office and just say thank you so much. And, you know, send it to this front office, too. You don't have to even just send it to the last guys who fucked up and gave Cutler that monster deal. Remember, Jay Cutler was signed to, like, a 7-year, $8 billion contract that the Bears will never be able to get out of, at least until they cut him after next season. But every Green Bay Packers fan should send the Chicago Bears front office, the past front office, and this front office a Christmas card for keeping him on the field. And this is why they should send a Christmas card to the new regime. According to Pro Football Talk, despite losing the game 31-23, and let's be honest, those final points from the Bears came with like 30 seconds on the clock. In that 31-23 loss to the Green Bay Packers, the Chicago Bears said that Jay Cutler did a, quote, "real good job," unquote, against the Packers. So, Cutler was 18-36. That's a 50% completion percentage. 225 yards. One touchdown, one interception. And again, that touchdown came with 30 seconds left in the game. One huge interception to Clay Matthews. But I'll tell you what, if they were talking about just his interception total against the Packers, then fuck yeah. Hey, real good job, Jay. Thanks a lot for only turning the ball over once and keeping us in the game. He was also sacked twice for a loss of 12 yards. So 18-36 for 225 yards, one touchdown, one pick. That is a quarterback rating of 67.5. Normally, a quarterback rating of 90 or above is considered good. The elites, like Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady, those guys are, you know, consistently there. Like Aaron Rodgers, his rating, 140.5. 18-23, 189 yards, 3 touchdowns. Quarterback rating of 140.5. That is, quote, a real good job, unquote. But the Chicago Bears were actually satisfied with what they got out of Jay Cutler despite a quarterback rating of 67.5 and a total QBR, this made-up stat from ESPN, where they say that a 50 is considered average. Jay Cutler's total QBR, 29.6. And the Chicago Bears are like, we'll take it. That is how far the Chicago Bears have fallen. And if I'm a fan of the Chicago Bears, thank the fuck Christ for the Chicago Cubs this year. And I never thought I would say that in my lifetime. If I'm a Chicago Bears fan, thank the fuck Christ for the Cubs. Otherwise, I don't know what I'd have to look forward to. Sure, the Blackhawks, but you know Patrick Kane is up for rape or whatever, and if he doesn't have enough money in his bank account, he's not going to get off on the charges. Tough times. Tough times if the Cubs weren't playing real well. So again, a total QBR of 29.6. That's 20.4. 20.4 below average. Meanwhile, Aaron Rodgers on the other side, 94.4. But the Chicago Bears say that Jay Cutler did a real good job against the Packers. Here's new head coach, John Fox. I thought Jay did a real good job. His pocket awareness, he had a couple of scrambles in there that I think were heads-up plays. He stepped up into the pocket, bullshit. But against this football team, we weren't quite as good as we needed to be. Left tackle Jermon Bushrod said Cutler did a tremendous job of managing the offense. Right tackle Kyle Long said the quarterback was lights out. And then, of course, Coach John Fox added praise to Cutler's work in his first game running the new offensive coordinator's offense. Unbelievable. Tremendous job. Lights out. These are some of the words being used to describe Jay Cutler's performance in a 31-23 loss to the Green Bay Packers in week one of the 2015 NFL season. I will repeat, tremendous job, lights out. So in Chicago, this is what is deemed lights out these days. 18 of 36 for 225 yards, one touchdown, one interception, a quarterback rating of 67.5, and a total QBR of 29.6. I'll tell you what, if I'm like Melissa McCarthy, I dish out some dough to hire these guys. Jermon Bushrod, Kyle Long, and head coach John Fox. And I make them my mirrors on my wall. Oh, Jermon Bushrod, mirror, mirror on the wall. How do I look today? Oh, Melissa, you did a tremendous job of putting away those ding-dongs and Twinkies. You hid them very well. I can't see where they went. You did a tremendous job. Mirror, mirror, Kyle Long on the wall. How do I look today? Oh, Melissa McCarthy, you look lights out. I can't even see your gunt today. Mirror, mirror, John Fox on the wall. Did you see how I took the stairs today to the second floor instead of the elevator? Yes, Melissa McCarthy, I saw that. You took the stairs to the second floor instead of taking the elevator. You did a, quote, real good job, unquote.
The hot mess.
Hot damn. We're running out of time already. All right, let's switch gears. Let's switch sports. And for the sake of the city of Cleveland, it's a pretty good thing that we are switching sports. We're not even going to get started on the Cleveland Browns, but it was quite the shit show at Progressive Field Tuesday night where the Cleveland Indians hosted the Kansas City Royals. All around just terrible performance by the team on the field, the home team on the field anyway, the guy running the fireworks, and the fans. Just an all around. It was a collective, a team effort. Not just the players, but the fans, the guy running the fireworks. I bet you a beer vendor tripped and spilled some Natty Ice or whatever they're serving at Progressive Field these days. So in case you missed it, there was a dude who looked exactly like the gay Stone Cold Steve Austin. And he took a foul ball off his size 9 dome. I mean, you got to see the size of this fucking thing. I mean, if it wasn't going to be Tuesday night, sooner or later, something was going to hit that fucking head, man. It is humongous. I mean, if you were to tell me that this guy can't eat a tray of nachos because when he gets down toward the end, they all just kind of pop up out of the tray and start orbiting around his head. He is like the Barry Bonds equivalent of guys who look like gay Stone Cold. That head is fucking ginormous. Like, I bet you there were a couple people trying to, like, throw their peanut shells away, and then they were, like, picked up in orbit by his head, and he got hit by a couple of peanuts in his head. That guy gets hit by shit all the time, I bet. Like, sneaking through a crowd, he's got to, like, make sure his head gets through first before the rest of his body. But anyway, the dude totally fucked up foul ball etiquette. Because everybody knows that the first rule of foul ball etiquette is that if you can't catch the ball, then get the fuck out of the way so somebody with at least 1 ounce of athletic talent can make a play on it. You would think that everybody knows that except this guy. Like I said, luckily he's okay, but hopefully it knocked a little bit of sense into him. And the next time a foul ball comes, like, he's not going to make an effort at it. Get out of the way. Let the kid in the wheelchair next to you, or there's like an old man. There's like an old 50-year-old dude there wearing a hat, tucked in, like, long sleeve collared shirt. And of course, he brought his glove to the game. Let that guy make a play on the ball instead of you. I mean, like, the ball hits him in the head first and then his hands go up. He was so late on it. Not even fucking close. Either that or buy a hat that has, like, you know, if you can find a hat that's big enough that has like a huge glove attached to it as well, just wear that hat and then throw your dome out there. And that's how you're going to catch it. But for as bad as this guy's effort was, and for as bad as the result was, it wasn't even close to as pathetic as the sack of fuck the tribe had in control of setting off fireworks on Tuesday night. So just like any major league ballpark these days, or any great white concert, when the home team hits a home run, this dude sets off fireworks. Well, at least he was supposed to set them off for the home team's players. Instead, this is what happened.
Down the line, into the corner, and Alex Rios has his second home run of the trip.
Speaking of mistakes, that man right there that's sitting up there controlling the fireworks, he just made one, and he's getting booed. He's putting his dunce cap on now. Yeah. Normally, when a Cleveland Indian hits a home run, they shoot the fireworks off, and this guy, the fans are letting him have it.
And they should be. They should be booing that guy. Alex Rios, like, you could hear him, like, that's his second home run of the trip. Yeah, it's the road trip. So, yeah, you better hang your head in your hands, you stupid fuck. Boo away, Tribe fans. That guy deserves everything he has coming to him. I mean, it is the top of the fifth inning. So you know who's not at bat in the top of any inning of any game at Progressive Field? You guessed it. The fucking Indians. The controller, whatever he uses. It looks like almost like an iPad that he has to set off the fireworks. That should be anywhere but in your hands during the top of any inning. And of course, to make matters worse, the Royals shut out the Tribe that night, and that dropped them back to below the 500 mark, although they won Wednesday night, so now they're back at the 500 mark. But again, we said it before, the Indians still have a shot. A lot of people picked the Indians to win the Central this year. And even a lot of people, like, at the four-letter picked them to win the World Series. And there's still a chance. They're only, like, four or five games out of the wild card. Still a chance. If they get hotter than shit, hotter than two girls rubbing their hump holes together on my mom's bed, if they get hotter than that, there is a chance they can still go to the postseason. But odds are they aren't going to make it. So if you look at the Indians, you look at the Browns. I mean, how upset are you if you're a Browns fan? It's like every year you go through the same shit, and it's like, haven't we had enough top five or top 10 draft picks to, like, be somebody now? The Seahawks needed like 3 years and they were Super Bowl contenders. The Browns are going on like year 40. So imagine in the city of Cleveland, where heroin overdoses are already at an all-time high. Imagine if LeBron James wasn't there to make the Cavaliers an annual contender. Done you, LeBron James. Attaching LeBron James to Savior when you are within Cleveland city limits, that is not a stretch. And it's also not a stretch to say that out of all the pig shit awful games that the Cleveland Indians were a part of this year, 71 losses, out of all the games, it didn't get any worse as a collective or as a team effort. Fans, players, coaches, fireworks operators. It didn't get any worse, and hopefully for the sake of Cleveland fans, it doesn't get any worse than it did Tuesday night.
The hot mess.
All right, there's one more thing football related that I want to touch on here before we get to the pile, because we're already running out of time. And as it stands right now, like, pretty much the whole pile is going to be the Rutgers University football team. So there's one more thing I want to touch on here in the hot mess. And it's a story that apparently Cowboys fans have known for a while and Niners fans may have known for a while. But within, like, the inner circle of football's greats, Charles Haley, the former great defensive end for both the Niners and the Cowboys, Charles Haley is known as one of the craziest players of all time. Now, I've had the privilege of interviewing both Joe Montana and Steve Young. And in both of those interviews, I asked them, if you had to take a cross-country flight from San Francisco to, let's say, Miami, or San Francisco to Washington, D.C., whatever, if you had to take a cross-country flight, who is the one teammate that you would not want to sit next to? And without hesitation, both Montana and Young told me Charles Haley. And there were kids in the room, so they didn't really elaborate on why. And I was like, Charles Haley. And I told Steve, when I talked to him, I was like, that's the same thing Montana said. And the whole crowd laughed, and it was the end of the interview, and we never really elaborated on why they said that. Well, last week, another quarterback great, Troy Aikman, went on Dan Le Batard's radio show, and the interview ran long, and Le Batard said that he didn't get a chance to talk to Aikman about Charles Haley. So at the end of the interview, he's like, hey, we're running out of time, but next time you're on the air, I need to hear Charles Haley's story. And here's how the rest of the interview went.
Troy, next time you come on with us, we get Charles Haley stories, okay?
Yeah, we'll need more time to cover him.
Yeah, well, that's why I'm out of time now. I wanted to ask you a Charles Haley story, but next time, how about tomorrow? Is tomorrow too soon? Is tomorrow
Haley
too soon?
Stories, they're pretty good. I don't know that you can tell a lot of them, though.
Yeah, well, what percentage of them involve him nude?
Virtually all of them.
Okay, so tomorrow, same time, Troy.
No one was more proud of his man than Charles Haley.
Yeah. True or false, one time he put that manhood on a teammate's shoulders during cards, and that
team... It was Matt Millen.
I mean, that's amazing. I can't imagine what it would be like to be on the air live with a guy like Troy Aikman, and he spills the beans like that it was Matt Millen. Oh, man. That's good stuff. So now we know why Montana and Young said Charles Haley. And hopefully I get that chance to interview him again, and I can ask them that off the stage, because I don't think that's one that they want to tell in front of the kids, obviously. But hopefully I get a chance to ask them off the stage if anything crazy like that happened, when they were around. But, I don't know what happened. I didn't want to close my eyes and envision Charles Haley putting his dick on Matt Millen's shoulders. But I don't know what happened after that, like what the result was, like if Millen went nuts and they got into a little tussle after that, although I don't think Matt Millen would want to turn around and tackle a naked Charles Haley. So I don't know what happened after that, but all I know is that if some dude is crazy enough to lay his big black cock on the shoulders of a man the size of Millen and isn't worried about what consequences he's going to face because of his actions, then that's somebody you don't fuck with. That's a badass man right there. And that's probably why he was such a great player on the field. But I'll tell you what, that's also a guy you don't introduce to your sister. Because there's nothing that you can do about whatever he's going to do to your sister. You know, one of my best friends married my sister. And all the time I get people asking me, like, hey, do you even care? Do you care? Like, doesn't that make you mad that one of your best friends is sleeping with your sister? I'm like, hey, somebody's going to do it, right? Might as well be one of your best friends. You know he's going to treat her right, hopefully, for the most part. So why not? Why not let it be the best friend, one of your best friends who's plowing your sister? Because when the moment you don't let your best friend sleep with your sister, someone like Charles Haley's doing it. And odds are, based on what we just heard from Troy Aikman, odds are there's going to be some kind of fisting sesh involved.
The Pile.
All right, back for another edition of The Pile. And it's been a while since we've done this. I mean, I could probably do three or four podcasts, one-hour-long podcasts, and do it strictly on the players that have been arrested since the last time we've done The Pile. Thank Christ. A lot of times people ask me, like, hey, are you worried? Are you worried, like, that you might not have enough people from week to week to talk about? No. Fucking athletes get arrested all the time for some serious shit. And this week, I don't even know if we're going to get past Rutgers University. Now, Rutgers University's main campus is in New Brunswick, New Jersey. But with all of the arrests that have been going down on just the football team alone, you know there's some students on campus who are getting arrested, but just strictly related to the football program, you would think that the campus is in like Trenton or Newark, not New Brunswick. All right, so here we go. Cue the Yanni music, Rakish. Here we go. All right, Rutgers head coach Kyle Flood has been suspended for the next three football games, but it has nothing to do with the fact that seven of his players have been arrested over the last 2 weeks. The most recent, an all Big Ten receiver and team captain, let's try and pronounce this one here, Leonte Carew. Leonte Carew. Suspended amidst, it looks like, assault charges. Assault charges, all right? So six other players have been kicked off the team in the past 2 weeks as the result of their arrests. Two players, cornerback Dre Boggs and fullback Lloyd Terry, have been charged in home invasions. The other four players, cornerback Nadir Barnwell, cornerback Ruhan Peel, safety Dylan Stevenson, and fullback Rayzone Gross, all face assault charges. But that's not why Kyle Flood is being suspended for the next three games. According to the four letter, Rutgers football coach Kyle Flood has been suspended three games and fined $50,000 for violating university policy about contacting faculty about a player's academic status. After emailing the faculty member from his personal account, Flood was told by a member of Rutgers academic advising staff not to contact professors about student athletes, but he still went ahead with the in-person meeting. According to Rutgers' full investigative report, Flood stated he may have told the advisor that he used his personal email account to avoid an Open Public Records Act request. So the student that he was checking up on was former cornerback Nadir Barnwell, and both Flood and Barnwell both admitted that Flood also made minor changes to a paper that Barnwell submitted to the professor, who had agreed to review it as partial satisfaction for the requirements of a course the student had already completed. So the president went on to say, blah, 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 that it's clear to me that Coach Ford had inappropriate communications. And if you go back, and according to the full investigative report, Flood stated that he may have told the advisor that he used his personal email account to avoid an Open Public Records Act request. So he knew what the rule was, but he went on and did it anyway. Yet, of course, he made an apology. Like, we already talked about it earlier in the show. He made an apology. Flood said, I want to apologize for the mistake I made in the process in contacting that teacher. I understand now that it was against the rule that I was unaware of at the time. I had the utmost respect for the faculty at Rutgers. I take full responsibility and accept the consequences of my actions. But even in his apology, that's the problem with these apologies. They come out and they say they're sorry, yet they're fucking lying through them the entire time. You tell one person that you use your personal email account so you won't get busted when they do an open records request. And then you apologize saying that you understand now that it was against the rule, but you were unaware of it at the time. It's bullshit. But that's like the least of the Rutgers football's program, the Rutgers football program's problems. August 25th, five players suspended for the first half of the opener. September 5th, five players dismissed. September 10th, Lloyd Terry dismissed after his arrest. And then Sunday, receiver Leonte Carew suspended indefinitely for assault. Now, I'm not going to get into detail about each one of these players' arrests because, for starters, we don't have time to do it, and there are much more interesting arrests to talk about. But what I do want to talk about is how their arrest can make me money. Gambling on them or against them. Because I'll tell you what, despite the fact that they might not have enough players to field a team on Saturday, they are only 9-point underdogs on the road against Penn State. They are going into Penn State, and they are only 9-point underdogs. Rakish would say something, let me tell you, bro, something stinks here like elephant nut. I'll tell you, something stinks there like an elephant's nut. Why would Rutgers, with all of the arrests, the coach has been suspended for the game, why would they only be a 9-point underdog to Penn State? I'll tell you what, if I'm a Penn State fan, that doesn't sit right with me at all. That's how bad your fucking team is this year. This team has lost 80% of their players to arrests, and they're still single-digit underdogs on your home turf. I'll tell you what, I might throw a little nickel down on Rutgers here, +9.
The Pile.
I'm going to be honest, this is pretty much the only way we'll ever talk about women's basketball on the podcast, dailyupperdecker.com. Check us out at facebook.com and on Twitter as well, at dailyupperdeck. We also have a Vine. It seems like the only time we ever talk about women's basketball, it's when Brittany Griner is beating the shit out of her pregnant wife, or now when this young lady, the University of Pittsburgh guard, Yacine Diop, a sophomore guard who was charged with aggravated assault, recklessly endangering another person, disorderly conduct, and sale and use of air rifles after an incident on campus last month. And all of that shit right there, that netted her 100 hours of community service, and that's it. And why? Why is it just that? Why is it just 100 hours of community service where she can just go teach the homeless how to shoot some buckets? Because she averages 9.3 points per game. Tell you what, if she was the 12th woman on the team, that's fucking jail time right there. The sale and use of air rifles. Now, we looked everywhere. We can't find any information on what she did. But I'll tell you what, aggravated assault, recklessly endangering another person, disorderly conduct, and the sale and use of air rifles. I'll tell you what, if you have a Kaga Fantasy League out there, current athletes getting arrested Fantasy League, pick up this young lady right here. Because everybody knows that when you get charged with aggravated assault, recklessly endangering another person, disorderly conduct, and the sale and use of air rifles all at the same time, you're going to be a repeat offender. It is only a matter of time before your Kaga Fantasy League team gets another slew of points. You know, when those charges are all together like that, it's only a matter of time before we start hearing about Yacine Diop in some kind of attempted murder charge or like, the misuse of food stamps or some shit. Pick up Yacine Diop for your Kaga Fantasy League team. You heard it here first.
The Pile.
Oh, you knew it was just a matter of time. And if you held on to former NFL running back Lawrence Phillips on your Faga Fantasy League team, that is former athletes getting arrested Fantasy League team, big points this time around. Sure, he's a repeat offender, so you know you're going to lose a couple of points there. But Lawrence Phillips, this is the big one. This was the one we were all waiting for. All like those the other two dozen crimes that he committed when he was at Nebraska and then on the Rams and after football, after he was kicked out. Those two dozen crimes are chicken shit compared to this one right here. Lawrence Phillips, 40 years old, is accused of killing 37-year-old Damian Dwayne Soward, his cellmate, who was found unresponsive the morning of April 11th in the cell they shared. Soward was pronounced dead at a local hospital the next day from neck compression asphyxia, according to an autopsy. The murder charge was filed this Monday. Phillips, of course, played for the St. Louis Rams, who selected him in the first round of the 1996 NFL draft, as well as the Miami Dolphins and San Francisco 49ers. He was one of the best running backs in college football during his years at Nebraska, compiling more than 3,000 yards in 3 years. But he found himself frequently in trouble off the field. He was arrested on suspicion of assaulting his girlfriend his junior year at Nebraska and was released by the Rams in 1997 for insubordination. Phillips was sentenced to 31 years, 4 months in prison in 2008 for inflicting great bodily injury involving domestic violence, spousal abuse, false imprisonment and vehicle theft. The sentence included convictions for both running down three teens in a car and choking his girlfriend. So the good news for Lawrence Phillips here is that, hey, you are probably going to spend the rest of your life, or at least the majority of the rest of your life, in jail. So why not kill your fucking cellmate? Because maybe from here on out, maybe you'll get to spend the rest of your days in jail with your own room.
The Pile.
Last up here in the pile, this one's a dandy. Tennessee freshman Andrew Butcher was arrested early Sunday morning after he was found intoxicated, which... right there, if you stop right there, it's like, yeah, not a story. We've all been pinched for underage drinking. Not a big deal. The thing with Tennessee defensive end Andrew Butcher was that he was found intoxicated and running around on Interstate 40. He was charged with public intoxication, underage consumption, and the possession of alcohol and violating a controlled access roadway. According to the Knoxville Police Department arrest report, the officer responded to a drunkenness call at 1:45 a.m. on Sunday morning and found Butcher running around on I-40 East near James White Parkway. Butcher had a very strong odor of an alcoholic beverage coming from his breath, bloodshot, watered eyes, slurred speech, and was unsteady on his feet. The player told the officer he had been drinking. No shit. And let's hope so. If it's 1:45 a.m. on a Sunday morning and you're found running around on an interstate, let's hope there was some kind of drug or alcohol use that put you there. Because if not, if that's just something you do after you're done watching Saturday Night Live, good luck, buddy. Good luck with that. All right, that's just going to about do it for us here at the Daily Upper Decker. Once again, find us every single day online at dailyupperdecker.com. You can also find us on Facebook and, of course, on Twitter at Daily Upper Deck. We also have a Vine. Don't forget to check in Friday at the Daily Upper Decker for our Indian intern Rakesh's football picks. And I'll tell you what, the young man made his bookie his bitch right away, bro. Last week, in case you didn't check it out, Rakesh was 5-1. The only game he missed was the over 75 points in the Tulsa at New Mexico game. He said take the over. I think they only got into the 60s there, but otherwise he hit the Wake Forest at Syracuse over 40.5 points, the Temple at Cincinnati over 54.5 points. The over in the Tennessee at Tampa Bay game in the NFL, that over actually hit in the first half. The Minnesota at San Francisco, he said take San Francisco plus 2.5. That one hit, bro. And then Seattle at St. Louis, he said jump on St. Louis plus 4 because the St. Louis team had won two of the last three games at home against the Seahawks. And he doesn't like that most of the stupid general public money is backing the Seattle team. He said that Jimmy Graham is at tight end now, and you would think that this Seattle team would be as potent as his cousin Deepak. The dude has like 8 kids and is only 27, my friend. But he didn't think it was going to happen last week, and it didn't happen. So once again, that's our Indian intern Rakesh's football gambling picks. That's every Friday at the Daily Upper Decker. Once again, find us at dailyupperdecker.com, on Facebook, and on Twitter at Daily Upper Deck.
The Daily Upper Decker, nothing but sports and crap.